Hi, welcome again to Sheep Farm. I think this is Sheep Farm 20. And the second edition of Mint Sauce Chronicles. A more laid-back podcast than the in-depth meaty monsters we do with Meet the Flockers. This one's, we'll call it the Spanish flu nonsense. And here with me again is our Chris, who's telling me he's not going to have too much wine tonight because he said he felt a bit sloshed last time.
No, what I was saying was I've just had my dinner, late supper. And had a glass of wine with dinner, so I'm going to lay off it till at least halfway through, fatty.
So you haven't got a straw bottle, have you?
No, I've got one lined up next to me, though, but I'm not going to have any now.
So you're not going to have any... When you say now, do you mean like now or not in next hour?
Maybe in the next hour.
Right, so you are going to have some then?
Probably.
What's the tipple tonight, then?
I've got a nice Cabernet Sauvignon, sorry.
Right.
From a Chilean one, nice.
I think anybody listening to this who's a wine, red wine connoisseur ought to give him some comments on his wine.
There has been a few comments. Someone said, get some Barefoot. It's nice, reasonably priced, tasty wine. And yeah, it's true.
Oh, no surprise. You've already tried some.
Yeah.
Shock and horror. So this podcast will be available on Podomatic for free downloads. Also, it goes out distributed via Podomatic on Google Podcasts, Amazon, Spotify, and a few others. We're trying to get it on Apple, but they're a right nightmare to be involved with, really. I don't think this will be released on YouTube. I think it might be a bit too heavy for them, and they'll probably get by. But we'll put a link. I'll do like a trailer for YouTube where you can go straight to the website where it's going to be. And when it's released, and you can watch it from there. I'd also like to say thanks to Mark Devlin for watching the Be Liar presentation and giving it a shout too. There were a lot of hard work gone into that by a few different people, but we mentioned that last time. People keep asking, where can we donate? We're not really in the position of doing that, and I was saying to someone today that we weren't expecting when we launched the YouTube channel in February, so much take up, really, to be quite fair. It's surprised us, hasn't it, Chris?
Yeah, quite a lot.
And so as far as donations, I don't suppose we're ready to do that type of thing at the moment, although we're developing the website and we're looking at a slightly different angle to donations, probably, which will, if we do go down that road, we'll let you know. People are subscribing and we're more or less there, being able to get back to you and keep you updated on what we're doing. And I've written quite a lot of blogs that you might be interested in as well that will be emailed out to people who subscribe to the website. I want to say well done to everybody who went on the march in London this last weekend. It seemed like a fantastic event. And I wish I could have been there. I know Chris does as well. Also, Hugo Talks put a great... video out on the New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, who's got eyes like mad dog's bollocks. her eyes go around like that snake off Jungle Book.
She looks all right from a distance, then you look closer and she just looks a bit nuts, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does. Yeah, she's been a speaker in the World Economic Forum, and Mr. Schwab, who definitely needs a deep dive on at some point. I started doing some initial research on him, and it's very interesting indeed.
It's like a giant slug.
It does look like a giant Bond villain slug, but Anal Schwab. But Jacinda Ardern is a real vocalist for the environment. I've got a video on her. I'm going to put it on YouTube channel. It's saying that we need to announce an environmental emergency in Parliament with everybody nodding behind her. This was last year. It's a recent video. And you should see her eyes. Her eyes are black, you know, glazed over. It's strange what's going on at the minute when you see people talking. I can't say I've ever noticed it in anything like this before. It reminds me of, remember when you see Hitler doing his rallies and he looks like he's really engrossed into, it's a bit like that. And you see his eyes and he's not like communicating with anybody apart from himself.
Yeah, like he's just a tool for, I don't know, like an amplifier.
Yeah, yeah, a voice for someone else. A bit like what Jerry were on about when people were talking through them patients. Anyway, but Hugo said we should do a deep dive on Jacinda Ardern. And, you know, when we saw the G7, I thought we need to do some leaders around the world, because a lot of them now, they're a strange phenomenon. They're all talking the same way. They're all saying the same things. It's like a script's been written, which it has, the New World Order script.
To be fair, it's been like that since the beginning of the nonsense, hasn't it? Everyone just manoeuvring in exactly the same position at exactly the same time. And then China this, Russia this. It's all nonsense, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is.
I mean,
is.
That...
So...
No, I'm going to say it, and then that nonsense with Wankok last week. I don't know, you just watch that, and I just think, more nonsense, more circus.
Well, I've just seen the new clown, Twat 2, Sajid, whatever he's called, he's now come in and said, oh, we can use the NHS app, like the vaccine passport now for people, so they might be able to go on holiday.
Right.
So he's come in and saved the day for people's holidays.
Yeah.
And
his first announcement, we just wanted to get out of these lockdowns. Yeah, sure you do.
Yeah, yeah, of course you do. Before. Yeah, you. It didn't say. Well, just turn the tap off then. Let's get out of it.
It's a bit tiring, isn't it? It's just more mass distraction.
It's just boring.
More mass distraction.
Boring.
More anger fueling. You know, like that. You show like seven people all hugging each other. I mean, if you can't see that, that's just there to annoy you and wind you up. You know.
Yeah. And, I mean, you've got the Euros. You've got the Wimbledon. You've got the Olympics. You've just got Ascot that's been on. All these people are jumping up and down. Nothing different happening. And is that going to be used as now? That's
of course
be
it is.
The
of course it
spreaders.
Is. Yeah.
We know that, don't we? One of the things, a little comment, some good comments, but one I picked up today, so it's a comment today from someone called Julie Kay. Dom and Chris, could you please do a video on why you're not into sports anymore? We did mention that a while ago. And one of you said that you don't watch it anymore at all, or rarely. No, I don't watch it at all. And I was wondering why you chose to do that. Well, I mean, I were into sport in a big, big way, and Christian were into film. I mean, I like film, but Christian didn't like sport. He never really watched it.
No.
But I went into sport, mainly football, boxing. I still do quite a lot of weight training for fitness and other things. But mainly football and boxing and rugby. And I don't watch any of it now, to be honest with you. Anything on mainstream television, I realised this about 15 years ago, whether it's football, rugby, or boxing, or any other sport, they're all controlled entities. Everything, the people playing them, the people commentating on them, the people filming them, the people in the stadium, it's a controlled environment. The powers that be would not allow 70,000 people to gather if it wasn't a controlled environment. They just wouldn't do that. And you're also getting it pumped out on your MK Ultra TV and radio. And the control that these things have got on a mental and financial hold over the whole world is astounding. You look at football, is a religion. It's like a religion now. And people put it before the family.
Look,
it's not just a game. It's not just a game.
Well,
It's more than just a game. It's more than just a
I've
game.
I've never liked sport at all. I've tried and I can't watch it because it bores me to death. But one thing I notice as an outsider, if you like, because I never watch it. And I've always thought it was funny when you see football managers and footballers talking about it. And it's like they're saving the world and they're talking about, I mean, if you like it, fair enough. And, you know, if it entertains you, whatever. But what makes me laugh is they talk so serious about it. This is an important game. The words important and game should not be in the same sentence, should they?
No, they don't. No. And also, when you see them interviewed afterwards, they haven't a clue what they're talking about. And they'll interview them and say, so what do you think about winning the FA Cup? And they say, well, you know, it'd be better if we can win it next year. Just like the last... whatever 90 minutes has not mattered and all the other games leading up to it.
It doesn't matter, does it?
Like, they don't know what to say physically. No, it doesn't matter. It's pointless. And And really, once you realise that it's a mind control operation, and all of it is a mind control operation, then why would you watch it? And that's the reason I don't watch
it. Well, I suppose, I'm talking as an outsider because I've never got into sport, but you are watching, you know, when you watch, the idea of it, I suppose, it's basic level, is you're watching someone at the physical peak, aren't you, performing. That's the basic idea. I feel like I have to leave the accident because the amount of times I stood in a cubicle and someone goes, you watch the game? And I go, no, watch football. Oh, you're a rugby man. I don't watch rugby. What the hell do you do then?
Yeah, well, you know, the environment that it's played in is reminiscent of war games. It's a Colosseum, and it's getting people to take sides, to say one side's rubbish and another side's rubbish, or another side's good and another side's good, when in reality, they're both the same and it doesn't really matter. And so, and also, once you realise it's controlled, then for me, all bets are off. And the same people that are controlling that are controlling this nonsense.
Well, also on a very basic level, it's a classic divide and conquer, classic bread and circus, isn't it? Stadium sport.
Yeah, it's teaching you to be a moron, basically.
Modern day gladiators.
It's bringing you down. Yeah, it's bringing you down to a moronic level. And that's it. That's my view. From a personal point of view, I had the Panini sticker books. I went to football matches. We had season tickets. Yada, yada, yada. Not at home, but at work and things like that. I used to go really every week to watch my team. I'm not going to mention what the team was, but it's sort of irrelevant. No, but it's irrelevant. It's absolutely irrelevant.
I'm sensing you're a bit angry that you were fooled by sport for so many years.
No, because it was all part of the process of opening up. And because everyone's been fooled by something. I don't look at it that way at all. In fact, I had to do it to get to a point where I am now. I don't look back and think, oh, I shouldn't have done that.
Oh, no, I'm not saying.
I did it because I didn't know, you know. So anyway, masks. And masks are playing a massive part in this. And in my view, they're a screenplay for future generations. If you think about the future films that people are going to see, whether it's news clips or film or TV, they're going to show people in 10, 15, 20 years' time with these stupid masks on, empty streets, and they can prove then that something happened, even though we'll be long gone, and other people won't remember, because they'll have had the minds taken out, probably, and or they're that young, they don't remember. And so they've just invented history. This last 2 years or so has just been invented history, mm-hmm. as we speak.
Well, it was the same with the old terrorist attacks, wasn't it? It didn't matter whether you believed it or not. They got the footage, they got the imagery, they got the news reels, they got all that, and it's just there, it's done. And whether you believe it at this moment in time doesn't matter, does it? Because like you said, in 10, 20 years, they can go back and go, look how terrible it was in the 2000s. There were like every other week or a gun shooting or this or that.
Yeah. Yeah, they can say that. So there are a few just quick talking points that we've been talking about really between us.
Oh, just one thing I wanted to bring up. we talked last time about the Delta variant. I just wanted to watch the Mike Williams video on Brighteon today, actually. And he mentioned the Delta variant thing. I mean, Mike Williams, right. I love his channel and I know you do, but I was not surprised, but I just wanted to let you know, I didn't find it on his site, I just watched that today, but it was about the same time we probably said that Delta variant thing, but I believe he's a hypnotist, so, and that's what we were talking about, which I thought was quite, he also did a little video, and I know I mentioned this to you earlier, and you said you already knew about this, but I'd never heard of it, ethylene oxide, and he did a little, he put someone else's video on there saying that it's on the end of every swab that goes up your nose.
Yeah. The Charles Schwab.
All made in China, and they've all got EO on the end, which it means the baby, ethylene oxide, whatever. What is that done?
Yeah, well, it's a carcinogenic. Ethylene oxide is a petroleum product, and it's a carcinogen.
Yeah.
It flabbergasts me that how stupid people seem to be. Because if I had a drink of tea, and then 10 minutes later I felt grim, I would have to suspect that drink of tea might have caused my gut rots, you know? Even if it wasn't, I'd have to suspect it. You'd have
to analyze everything you've done in that drink.
Milk might have been off or whatever, you know. If you go out for a meal and you come back with some lurgy, you think what meal you've had that was something were off. And yet people can get jib jabbed, get blood clots, end up in hospital, I know another guy who apparently passed out, sounds more like collapsed, smashed his head on his desk, cut all his head open, nose, jaw, everything, and just thinks he fainted.
Well, unless you had an history of fainting, you wouldn't faint, would you?
No, it's first time he's ever done it. No, it's first time he's ever done it. He's had two jib jabs and he's fainted. And it just astounds me how people can't link it. But maybe I'm thinking, I'm being unfair. I don't know. I don't think I am.
What if the apocalyptic 1918 pandemic were to recur? That's a scary prospect.
Of all the major disasters that could befall the human race, I think pandemic is the most likely, and it's growing more likely all the time.
This is a copy of the UK pandemic influenza response plan, and the impact could be a 1918 type pandemic with severe illness in young healthy adults, which of course would be pretty devastating. Or it could be a pretty mild pandemic. And in some ways, you have to plan for the worst case scenario, because if that one comes and you're not ready for it, then, you know, then you're in big trouble.
Planning for a modern pandemic has built on the work of pioneers such as James Niven.
More might have been done to limit the spread of the disease, and the public health authorities may be expected in future outbreaks to press for further precautions to be taken.
Contrast Niven's approach in Manchester to that of Sir Arthur Newsholm, responsible for the whole of Britain.
You tend to be remembered for the big mistakes, and, you know, his failure to intervene more vigorously in 1918 in the pandemic was a mistake.
Even today, there's always a risk of someone making a catastrophic mistake because other factors cloud their judgment.
So this is the main conversation that we're going to have tonight about the Spanish flu. It's been in my head for years, before all this crap kicked off, for years, that it's nonsense. Then I read a book by two people that came out last year, Dawn Lester and David Parker. The book is What Really Makes You Ill? Why Everything You Thought You Knew About Disease Is Wrong. And it's a really big book. It's really deep. And I've read it once, but you probably need to read it about several times before all of it stuck. It's about 800 pages.
I ain't got it yet.
It's a textbook. I wouldn't mind interviewing these guys, actually, because I wouldn't mind interviewing them on this subject and a couple of other subjects they do. But a lot of the stuff that they do is about germ theory and terrain theory. Yeah, bear in mind the both theories.
Let me just give a bit of background there, though, Dom, because the reason we're on about Spanish flu is, basically, I think we're going back a couple of years, because you're a bit of a Second World, First World War buff. Always read books on that, haven't you? And you started to suspect that possibly the Spanish flu is just nonsense, and it lined up to set us up for what's going on now. So everyone can refer back to the Spanish flu and go, oh, it's a historic event. It's happened before, blah, blah, blah. And the more you look into it, the weirder it gets.
Well, they always say, what the words they're using is, it happens once every 100 years. Yeah.
And it was literally 100 years to the day.
And ironically, the BBC almost. In 2018, BBC Two, made a programme. It was like a docu soap or docu info. Yeah,
it were called, I've got it here, Dom. The BBC, the flu, yeah, that
were called the flu
million.
That killed 50 million. Christopher Eccleston narrated it, this docudrama about the 1918 flu pandemic, also called the Spanish flu, which killed more than 50 million. Now, those numbers I'll come on to in a minute, and we're not going to do a deep dive in this. I want to have it just as a talking point, but I'd really like to do a full deep dive on this because I think it deserves it, to be honest with you. Interesting, the cast included one Professor Wendy Barclay, a British virologist. She's currently head of Department of Infectious Disease and chair in Influenza Virology at the Imperial College, London, which is also houses that knobhead Ferguson.
Oh, Dom, as well, Christopher Eccleston played, guess who?
Yeah, Doctor Who. The WHO. Yeah, World Health Organization.
WHO.
But Wendy Barclay leads a team of scientists studying influenza and viruses and its physiology and morphology to discover novel vaccines. So she's working for an Imperial College that's funded by the Gates Foundation and I think the Wellcome Trust. She works for vaccine companies, yeah, and she's now working for the BBC, pushing the mantra that more than 50 million people got killed when they've got no proof, none, that the proof was 50 million people got killed. Yeah? 2 years before this nonsense started. And she's also a member of SAGE. Yeah? Exactly. She's also a member of SAGE. Around about this time, a lot of the stuff in 1918, the Flexner Report, sponsored by the Carnegie Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation, basically ripped up the whole medical history and started a clean page, investing in universities and writing how doctors had to pass their exams to be a doctor. And everything else outside that were quackery. That's where it began. And all drugs, 90% of all drugs have petroleum products in them. 90% of all drugs. So the Rockefeller Foundation obviously didn't have anything to do with that. No, none whatsoever. Like that lady there who was a scientist for SAGE and for vaccines and for the Imperial College sponsored by Bill and Melinda Gates. She had no ulterior motive in that BBC docu-rama.
I was saying to you earlier, Dom, that it's funny, you know, when you think of films with a politician and they're doing a talk to the public. And if you think back to Iraq War and in all films and stuff like that, there's always like a military guy winging them at one side while they talk about, you know, what's going on in the country. And now it's a scientist or a doctor or a whatever, you know, or a Hancock or a, you know, the health secretary or whatever. They're the new
messiahs
version the new of that. Messiahs. They're the new messiahs. And the new place we're spending all this money.
We're going to do the SAGE. We're just doing the research on the background of a lot of the SAGE members. And some of the stuff we're finding is very, very interesting indeed. And when you start looking into the backgrounds of these people, as we've done with other people, you realise that they're actually making policy now. They're actually, as we found out over the last 18 months, deciding what happens to people and they haven't been voted in. They're not legally, shouldn't be legally controlling anybody, and they are. And these people need to be put up against the wall and shot, in my opinion, but that is just my opinion. And anyway, going back to Spanish flu, the victims were mainly from fighting ages, round about 15 to 34, young men who normally do not suffer first or at all, and no one knows the exact number of deaths. I've got an excerpt from that book that I was talking about, in this book. There's an excerpt by a lady called Eleanor McBean, who I think was a nurse at that time. And this is what she says. It was abundantly obvious that there was no epidemic disease. The stresses of war and combat, the multiple toxic vaccinations, the use of toxic medicines, the appalling conditions in which soldiers lived and fought, the exposure to deadly chlorine gas and other toxic materials provide ample evidence to adequately explain the epidemic of illness and the devastating loss of life. If the epidemic influence were the cause of the epidemic, then all who come within range would develop the disease. And that wasn't the case. That just wasn't the case at all. And for the first time, there was mass vaccinations. In fact, what would people were being vaccinated on a huge scale, and massive cases of mumps, measles, typhoid fever, sleeping sickness, and other things were all reported, not just influenza. So people were dying of things other than this raging flu that came out. And some of the vaccines that were given were all experimental vaccines as well. And they were like, typhoid, rabies, smallpox, and they were all given to soldiers. And I've got books that I've read in my library, diaries from people, like this one, Home in Time for Breakfast, where the guy, Stuart Chapman, actually says he was inoculated and then there was a massive outbreak of measles 2 weeks later. He doesn't put the two and two together, like the clowns at the moment who don't put the two and two together.
That's the one I remember you telling me about years ago.
And this is a day-to-day diary, which is very interesting because he talks about, like I say, joining up, having his first round of inoculations, as he calls it, and then a week later, they all went down with a case of measles in his hut, and they had to be segregated off and sealed off and basically fed through the door. But this was going on all the time, and he got a bad...
Well, you've heard that. You've heard that same story through Vietnam War, Iraq War.
The Gulf War syndrome is huge. They got vaccinated with biowarfare weapons and then got sick, and the government didn't acknowledge that they were sick. And but this was happening throughout these books. I mean, I've got another one called Harry's War. Same thing. The Great War of Harry Drinkwater. Another one. Last Man Standing. Norman Collins. All these people. I've got other ones. All of them talk about... being vaccinated and them going ill. And
did any of them talk about Spanish flu?
I've read quite a lot of books on this, and no, none of them ever mention when the war's over. Generally, the books go like a year afterwards, and they talk about the celebrations and what they did after the war. But none of them, in fact, in one of these books, I think it's this one, it tells you how many people died, but doesn't mention... The Spanish flu at all. It just tells you how many people died in the war in one of them. And you'd think, again, we're going to come on to that, but not one of them says, I'm terrified about going home in case I get this, or that my mate died of a mysterious illness. The mates died because they got blown up.
Yeah.
Or the mates died because they got chlorine gassed. Or the mates died because they got shot. And their arms and legs blown off. Mm. Yeah, not because.
So what you're reckoning that they were in the war. They got jabbed up, then they went home, and then a lot of people just started mysteriously dying.
Well, if you think about it, right, during that war, the amounts of ordnance used, and the types of chemicals that were in the ordnance, the bombs and the bullets, these people were breathing that in constantly. They were knee deep at times, waist deep a lot of times, in rat infested water that contained dead bodies. They were having to drink this water because there were no water supplies. They were drinking water from petrol cans with petrol in it because there were no cans. Yeah, they were consuming food that were caked in this dirt and mud. They were consuming less food because they couldn't get food up to the front because they were all getting blown to bits. So they were malnutritioned. They were young people, so they had the strength to survive, some of them, but they had shell shock, major mental problems, as you can imagine, bad diets, dirty water. Talk about drinking shell old water, with dead bodies in it. There were rats. All these things.
Imagine all that. Imagine all that as well. If you try and leave, you get shot by your own.
Well,
guys.
Again, you get shot for cowardice. Earth, isn't it? Yeah. So you've got to either run into the bullets or run back. I mean, the stress of that alone would no.
Can't
and a lot of these people were coming home with all these problems. I mean, if you look at chlorine gas, what chlorine gas does to your respiratory system, that causes pneumonia. It causes all sorts of respiratory problems. That's just one. Look up, is it chlordite that they use in bullets and stuff like that? Look at the side effects of all this. Look at the side effects of all the explosive TNT and things like that. All these cause respiratory problems. And a lot of the nurses say that when they were treating people, it wasn't spreading to them. Yeah? So that doesn't make sense for something that is rife. You imagine if you were at the front and everyone were going down with dysentery, typhoid, and things like that you get when you're in all these unsanitary conditions. None of them were dying on the front of this Spanish flu or 1918 flu. None of them. Yeah? Why weren't they dropping like flies at the front? Doesn't make sense, does it?
And also, like you said, the numbers, you start, I mean, a lot of the books I looked at said 40 million. These are a few old, year old. And then all of a sudden they changed it to between 40 to 100 million.
There were mass vaccinations as well on top of all this. And there were several vaccines, including rabies, tetanus. I think early flu jabs were being used as well. So there were several vaccinations that they were injecting into these people. And not only that, they were using, when people got pneumonia-type syndromes, let's just think they get sent home, they've got chlorine gas poisoning, and they think they've got pneumonia. What they're going to treat them with? Well, some of the drugs they were treating with were early aspirin treatments, and they were giving them high dose because they thought this cleared lung problems up, aspirin, IVs. Yeah? And the side effects of them, you can go into pneumonia. Yeah? So they were actually intensifying the effects of the whatever illness that they actually had. And again, I'm glossing over this. I've done a lot of research in the background of this type of stuff, and I'd like to do a deep dive. But the reason we're talking about this is a few years ago, I said to Chris, I said, Spanish flu's nonsense. And it was only when I got this book by these two guys, Don Lester and David Parker, that I knew I weren't going mad. Because I said to him, when did we ever learn about Spanish flu at school? And I could, he were racking his brain, and he said, never. Didn't you? Never. So we've spent the last couple of years, I've asked a lot of people the same question. Did you learn about the Spanish flu at school? And of a certain age, if you're around about 15, 16 now, they might be taught you it, because the last 10 years they seem to have tried indoctrinating kids with it. But of our...
Well, where I was working, Dom, I asked a woman, we got talking about school. I'm guessing she was in her late 40s, 50s, and she said... she was a history buff at school. I said, can I ask you a question? She said, did you learn about Spanish flu? And she looked at far and went, no. She went, that's weird, isn't it? And I went, yeah, no, it's me and brother talking about it. Anyway, then I asked some of the other guys were with who were 19, 20, and they had 18,
well, again, 19. Take 10 years off that, 2009. When we get further into this, we'll realise that a lot of this stuff started around the time they started pushing the flu jab in this country. But nobody's, right, so this is why I know it's nonsense, yeah? I'm not saying nothing happened and people weren't dying. Again, like this stuff. We weren't
like
taught about it
to me.
At school. Fact. Yeah? Yeah, no, I wasn't. I'm 51. Chris is 47. And people of a younger age, my wife is younger and she hadn't heard about it. Your wife hadn't heard about it. They're about 10 years younger than us. And vice versa. My eldest son is 27. He weren't taught it at school either. So up to a certain age group, they have not been taught about the Spanish flu, right? At school. There are no memorial statues to the dead of the Spanish flu. Apparently it killed more people than World War I. Yeah? And we'll get into the numbers in a sec. But there are thousands of World War I statues. There's one in our village. Yeah? Yeah, there's one in every village, every town, right? There's massive memorials across Europe of and graveyards of the dead from World War One. Nothing from the Spanish flu. Nothing.
It was literally known for wiping out entire villages in the First World War.
But nothing. The PALs, they were called. They used to go, the PALs Association, you get a mill and they'd all go to war and join up at the same time. And they'd all get obliterated. Right. But... there's no memorial statues for the dead. No graveyards, mass graveyards showing these nice, lovely white stones of the dead that are being pruned and said they're the victims of this 1918 or Spanish flu. There's no national day like Remembrance Sunday or poppy appeal for survivors. There's nothing. There's no Remembrance Day to say, let's remember the numbers in this country. They say there's about up to 250,000 people died of Spanish flu. Most of them were fighting age, yeah? On a side note, the numbers on the Remembrance Sunday is 11-11-11, 11th hour, 11th day, 11th month. And they're selling poppies, which is basically heroin, to stick on your lapel. Again, ties you back into East India Company and China, doesn't it? But And also, the fourth one, right, is I never heard my granddad or grandma talk about the Spanish flu. Yeah?
No, never heard anyone talk about it.
I've never heard my granddad and her grandma, who's in her 90s, talk about Spanish flu. Yeah? And I've had lots of conversations with people about this, right? Nick's mum and dad are in the 70s, yeah? And they never mentioned Spanish flu. I've asked them, yeah? They can't remember Spanish flu. And also, my mum and dad, yeah, although they're not with us anymore, they never mentioned it to us, ever. You need to be careful of that, because Spanish flu were horrible. Never mentioned it once.
Well, it's a horror story from a few generations.
Our mum and dad's parents would have been living right through the middle of that, right through the middle of it, you know? And so they're the four things for me, but there is another one as well about this, and it weren't taught in school, but it's books. How many books were written around that certain time? And it's something that Chris started having a look into. And
it was a while ago when we talked about it, going back 6 months.
It's longer than 6 months ago, Chris.
When I actually first looked, when we started talking about it, then I would just had a quick scroll around. I was looking on Amazon. I thought, when did these Spanish flu, like, you know, factual non-fiction books come out? So as you do, I put in, you know, Spanish flu books. And the first five pages, some of them could have been reprinted. So you've got to take that into account. But even then, it's weird because six came out in 2019. And this is according to their dates. Like I said, some of them could have been reprints, and I'm sure they were. But then none came out in 2019. I didn't see any on those five pages. 38 came out in 2020. I mean, can you write a book and have it printed in a year? I'm sure you can, can't you? But it's still, it's a lot of books. And then another 15 came out in 2021. But there was one in 2014.
But I mean, this is all recent stuff, aren't they, Chris, really? You know, all these books aren't like 1922, are they? You know what I mean?
Well, just hang on a minute. There was one in 2014, the 1918 flu pandemic. There's one in 2005, October morning, spelled as in morning, and 2010. And that's all I could really find. But what is interesting is I then looked on the Goodreads fiction section, and it came up when he put in, Spanish flu, came up with 91 books that had mentioned the Spanish flu in it.
Right.
80 of them were between 2000 and 2020. Seven of them were in the 90s. And then there was a couple that were in old books, like 1922 or something like that. Where did I write that down? Like 1922. But then they didn't get issued or reissued till like 2000. Like I said, I only did a skirting amount of research on it, so I might have missed something. But on that way, the one came out, they came like swallows. First came out in 1937. Then it was in 2001.
You'd expect, and we're just coming to the numbers, right? In Britain, 250,000. In America, between 650 and 700,000 say died there. In France, I think it were about 400,000. These are round figures. I'm not going to go through into great detail. In Germany, 700,000 people were meant to have died. And across Europe, there were, you know, like Belgium and places like that, they were meant to have all these people there as well, dying. Now, they actually said at the time, and the figures, this is where another part of it is absolute nonsense. The figures were saying that it killed more than the World War One. Now, apparently on all sides in World War One, 30 million people died, right? 30 million, yeah? But that's a lot of people. 30 million people died in 4 years. Of combat, right? Now, initial estimates were that I saw were 10 to 20 million. Then that changed in the mid 2000 with some research that were done, I think by some British people and the CDC, to 20 to 50 million. Now, have you noticed that's a lot of people in the First World War killed 30 million, and now they're saying 20 to 50 million. There's a lot of finger licking and seeing which way the wind's blowing there, in my opinion. And now, after 2009, it's 50 million to 100 million. If you were going to guesstimate stuff and theorise, them numbers are just made up to scare people, 50 to 100. And there's a BBC documentary that we mentioned earlier, and I'm going to play the beginning bit at the end of this to watch. And that's actually what it says, that the next pandemic, this one in 2018, will possibly kill up to 300 million people. That's what the woman says.
Right. And I mean, a lot of those books I looked at said 40 million, and then it kind of changed to 40 to 100 million. I mean, how can you... I mean, we know, I think, is it 27 million Russians died in Second World War? I mean, you know that an exact number, 27.
Yeah, yeah. Well, whereas in the World War One, when they counted everything, bullets, I remember reading one of the articles in one of these diaries that said, at something like 7 o'clock every night, we've got to fire two belts of machine gun bullets. And I thought, well, that's a bit strange, into no man's land. So no matter what's happening, there's nobody coming out to fire two belts of ammunition or whatever it is, because someone signed a deal to use
that many bullets.
Bullets, yeah. And all along the line, somebody's firing a gun at different intervals. If they don't fire it, then that
war deal,
exactly. So somebody doesn't earn any money. And so when you think about it, they know about this little bit, they've got to fire that, yet they don't know how many people died in the world's biggest epidemic ever. Mm. Now, the most interesting part of this to me is that the figures they say of people that died in the most of the deaths were in India and Africa. So nearly 90% of the deaths weren't in Europe.
So what does that mean?
It's nonsense.
Yeah, I know it means it's nonsense, but what?
How are you ever going to find out? How are you ever going to find out? Did they actually die or not? I don't know.
Well, it's like saying there's a horrible Delta variant in India. We don't know, because you're not allowed to go.
We don't know. And they're showing pictures of people that came from a gas leak 2 years before. You know?
Or is it like saying, the ship got bombed in the middle of the ocean? You'll never see where it was.
Again, you're never going to find that out, are you? Ever?
No. History's the biggest cover. Best cover, isn't it? Because you'll never...
Yeah.
I mean, you've got what your family and friends and grandparents tell you, and none of them told us anything about this. None of us learned it at school. But I mean, the fiction that came out, just quickly, there's only a scattering between 2000 and 2020, like one or two a year came out where it mentioned it.
Yeah.
And then there was a massive peak in between 2010 and 2012, when it was 6, 8, 7. Then in 2012, 11 books came out in this list that I found. How decisive it is, I don't know. But it's just weird that it peaked between 2010 and 2011. Then 10 years later, blah, blah, blah happens. Do you know what I mean? Then all the other years, there was nothing. It was like that period is in this list. And I'm sure that's like a...
Well, it's a build-up.
An idea,
Yeah, it's the build-up. The reason they're doing that is because Gates has got his arm around this, pushing it, yeah? And as you found that blog with Gates's grandmother, who apparently...
Let's just mention that quickly. There was a book... when I was looking through this, I found a blog, and Bill Gates has got his own blog. Can you believe it? The title of the article was "This book taught me a lot about Spanish flu." And it's by John M. Barry. Didn't you write James Bond theme tune? 2004 book, The Great Influenza. And in that, he says just briefly, he says that then as now, people isolated at home, streets were empty, and industries were shut down.
Well, we know that's nonsense.
You had them pictures of them all coming home from the war streets.
They're all dancing around outside Buckingham Palace. It's just nonsense, you know. Yeah. In America, they were driving down middle of New York in them.
Ticker tape flying around.
Yeah, exactly, just nonsense. It's nonsense.
Yeah. That was an interesting one as well, Dom. I saw this on a documentary on TV that apparently Woodrow Wilson, even though he was sick before the Second World War, he'd actually got Spanish flu, but he kept
it.
First World War, sorry. He'd got Spanish flu because he didn't tell anyone because he didn't want to distress everybody. He got a violent...
So at the Versailles Treaty, we're led to believe that Woodrow Wilson got flu, not Spanish flu, they said flu, but then in other things they meant leading on that he got Spanish flu, and went light on the negotiation of the deal, which went on to cause World War II because he had Spanish flu. So you're telling me that Colonel House, right, would have allowed the person he's controlling to do a shit deal to cause World War II?
Yeah. In that book it says if it wasn't for the pandemic, World War II might not have ever happened.
Yeah, well, it's just nonsense, isn't it? Nonsense. Just more absolute bullshit.
Another good bit in that blog is Gates got given the book by his good friend, Bill Forge, public health hero, who helped eradicate smallpox.
No, he didn't. it's like smallpox were around hundreds of years, right? And apparently, if you believe it, it probably spread more with a stupid vaccine that were given out. But anyway, I'm not getting into all that.
Yeah. It's just funny that little story he's put in there, though, just throwing that in there. You had the book.
Well, again, I'm going to put some pictures up, and some of these pictures show you've got people that are, I suppose, are nurses holding stretchers, and they've got pristine white masks on.
Yeah,
we were looked like they've been superimposed. Yeah.
And there was the one with him telling them to get off a bus. Do you remember that?
Yeah. No mask, get off the tram.
Just to end this fight, just the other thing that made me laugh in this was, apparently George W. Bush read this book and straight after created a multi-million dollar pandemic preparation bill. This book had a lot of clout, man, didn't it?
It did, yeah. I mean, that's what you do. You read Beano and then
change
come up
all
with,
your policies.
Yeah. No, we're going to have to come up with some new rules on dogs because Ganasha has just bit that postman.
Let's change how we run the world.
Yeah. Just because Ganasha has bitten somebody and Dennis the Menace has put a roller skate on some of the steps.
Red and black stripy jumpers from now on.
Yeah. But I mean, some of the pictures that you see, there's some with a lot of coppers lined up, I think, with the truncheons out, with these pristine white masks on grainy pictures, but the mask looks like a nicely ironed napkin.
When I was looking through the books, what was interesting, I think I saw two of the fiction ones where they actually had masks on and they were pre the nonsense. So they were 2017, 2018, and there was a picture on the front with the masks on. And then there was some in the non-fiction bits, where they had masks on from 2019 and 2018. And you couldn't have, the book came out at the end of 2019, but you couldn't have written and produced it and had that style of surgical mask on by then.
Well, again, like anything, like a book, right? You've got to do the research, write it. Then you've got to be finding a publisher.
Mm.
You know what you're talking about there are people that have been tasked with writing a book on a certain subject, paid for by people who want this narrative out.
And some of the headings in them, fight that one that I was on about there, where the guys on the cover's got a mask on. Yeah. Flu pandemic, 2018, 2019. Oh, that was weird as well. It said flu pandemic. Was there a flu pandemic between 2018 to 2019? It's saying there was. That's the title of the book, Flu Pandemic, 2018 to 2019. Can we learn from the Spanish flu and prepare for what's coming? 2018, that was written, February.
Right.
And he had a mask on the front of it, a big one. Right up to the
camera. I mean, these are just all predictive programming stuff, aren't they?
But it could go on forever, but I think anyone should find it interesting. Oh, just quickly, sorry, just listen to this. There was one, right, called The Spanish Flu, Narrative and Cultural Identity in Spain. Came out 2013. On Amazon, it was £89.93, which is 29. But in paperback, that's in hardcover, paperback, it was £69.99, which is 33. Thought I was just a little tidbit.
Yeah. The numbers are never lie again.
Yeah.
But I mean, all the sporting events were on, full football fixtures. Bear in mind, this didn't just happen in 1918. Apparently, went on into the early 1920s. But yeah, all the full football fixtures came on and grounds were packed out and it were roaring 20s.
You sent me some pictures of the football grounds packed.
Oh, packed. Cricket, rugby, boxing, the whole thing in America. Horse racing, all packed out, dancing.
It's funny as well, because if you look into the history of the Spanish one, it talks about waves as well, doesn't it? There's wave one, two, and then an outbreak here, outbreak there. So it was filling all those holes in for people if they wanted to research it for themselves.
Yeah. And again, this is just a quick chinwag for 40 minutes, but what we wanted to say was that the Spanish flu is basically... There are holes like Swiss cheese, yeah, bollocks. There are holes in it like Swiss cheese, like all the other stuff that we seem to look into and other people look into. And you can you don't even have to look that deep or ask really difficult questions, you know. No. Were we taught it at school? No. Well, hang on a minute. It killed 100 million people, but we've never been told about it until 2009.
That's more than the First and Second World War, is it?
Yeah, probably more than every war put together.
I mean, and also we learned about Black Plague all the time and the Fire of London and this and that. Yeah. But the biggest disaster that's ever happened, no one knew anything about it.
No, talk me about Adrian's Wall.
Oh, and that guy getting an arrow in his eye. In
Battle of Hastings.
I needed to know that. I needed to know that.
I need to know. It's coming useful after school. Yeah, after
ever
school,
since. Yeah, help me fail all my history exams.
But again, a very visual thing, gets an arrow in his eye, Harold. You remember what happened there.
I just thought, was that the first one-eye symbolism?
Maybe, could be. I remember Jethro Tull, crop rotation system as well. Right. We got told about that, crop rotation system where leave one field fallow. Yeah. But they never told me about World War One. And in fact, they didn't really teach us about World War One at all.
No, because the reason for it starting was bollocks, that's why.
Yeah, and... The Franz Ferdinand thing were just absolute nonsense. There's a couple of good books, actually, by... I forgot the names of them now, but they wrote the real history of World War One and how...
I've got a good book about that, because I'm not as into reading about war as you used to be. But Nick Collerstrom wrote a good book, How England Started Both World Wars. It's only a short thin book, but it just briefly punches it.
Well, I think he actually... I'm not saying he nicked it, but he did some work on that book with them, the guys, because they mentioned him in the book. I think he helped them edit it.
So he's a history professor.
He was something like that, wasn't he, Nick Killerstrom? It comes out with some good stuff, though, Nick Killerstrom. So just to recap, it were never taught at school. There's no statues. There's no Remembrance Day. Yeah. I never heard it from a personal point of view from my grandma. Also, up and down in the village where we lived, there were a lot of old guys. None of them. Talked about...
Tommy were in his 80s.
None of them talked about, you've got to watch out if you get flu, because could be Spanish.
Actually, if you think old Tom was in his 80s. In Harold Hurst,
military guy.
All those old boys. None of them ever mentioned it. And it'd be like a horror story, wouldn't it? Watch out or you'll get Spanish flu. You know what I mean?
Well,
like one of them.
Up and down village, where we live, loads of them go. You know?
If you're talking about an influenza... And no one knows anyone who died of it. What does that remind you of?
Let me think.
Don't know anyone who died of it.
Yeah, don't know anybody who got ill or died of it. Somebody asked me why we're called sheep farm, and I keep saying that, look, we lived on a small holding and kept sheep, but I think I need to tell them the story about your lamb that you brought up on a bottle. My dad got him a lamb, and he called it Skipper. And he brought
you had one as well.
I had one as well, but I don't know where mine... I can't remember what mine were called.
They were both
but
orphans, yours died.
Yeah, I think yours were called Skipper, and we brought them up. Christian bottle fed it, and it got a bit big for bottle feeding, so...
You used to follow him to school.
Yeah, I used to follow him all over, round field and everything, and we only had a small field, but used to follow him round field.
The drive to school.
One Sunday... Christian, we were having a Sunday dinner in caravan, and Christian said, "Dad, where's Skippy?" And my dad said, "It's there, next to the fucking peas." Which in English it means it's there next to your peas. And that's from a really broad Yorkshire.
And then he laughed very heartily as well.
Yeah. Sorry to you vegans there, but we were brought up with, my dad were a butcher. Yeah. So, yeah. And also, we were brought up to respect what you ate as well.
One of my earliest memories was going to the slaughterhouse. We always say we've got a slaughterhouse sense of humour. I remember going to the slaughterhouse with my dad, and there was no abuse there at all, but one of my earliest memories was sitting me on a sheep.
We were taught to, my dad were brought up in a poor family, and they had to hunt their own food to eat in the late 1930s and 40s, after the war, because they didn't have any money, and I'm sure a lot of people were like that.
Spanish flu wiped them all out.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that, yeah. Mm. There were enough people to fight in the Second World War, though, and die in the millions.
Yeah, where
did they get all them from if the whole fighting generation had disappeared?
Indian battalions as well, fair.
Yeah, no, they didn't exist because they're gone. 100 million died.
Didn't learn about them in history ever, did you? Indian battalions from the Empire.
No. But in fairness, the Indian battalions were in the First World War.
I know they were. I'm just saying you never learnt about it at school.
No, No. Anyway, we're gonna sign off here, and we hope you enjoyed it. This is Sheep Farm Mint Sauce Chronicles. Yeah. See you later.
Take care, bye. Everybody. Bye.
Skies.